Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. There are hundreds of thousands of DACA recipients in the U.S. They're all young adults who were brought illegally to the U.S. as children by their parents. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program was established in 2012 under President Barack Obama. It does not grant legal status. It gives authorization to work in the U.S., a chance to apply for a Social Security card, and a temporary deferral to deportation. DACA applications must be renewed every 2 years. Many DACA recipients worry this may be the final year they can renew. The Trump administration wants to end DACA. It argues the program was created without the proper authority. The case is currently before the U.S. Supreme Court. It could render an opinion any day between now and June. There's also a pandemic coursing through the country. 29,000 healthcare workers are DACA recipients. What would happen if they could no longer work? A letter to the Supreme Court by the Jerome N. Frank Legal Services Organization at Yale Law School argues, quote, "The country is not prepared to fill the loss that would result if DACA recipients were excluded from the healthcare workforce." Later in the program, we'll hear from a DACA healthcare worker on the front lines. Right now, we hear from Linda Brand Miller, an immigration lawyer in San Antonio. She says a decision to terminate DACA would be devastating.
It sort of sends them back to where they were in 2012 and prior, where now they are sort of back into the entire immigrant mindset of not knowing what's going to happen to them. For this particular group, these are students that grew up here. We've educated them. They are assimilated. And many of them have professional degrees. Many of them own homes. Many of them have started businesses. So they are certainly an integral part of the economy and our and all communities. There's an estimated 700,000 to 800,000 DACA students nationwide, over 100,000 estimated to be in Texas. So it's a significant group of people. And yes, they're all sort of, now more than ever, again, going back to what's going to happen to their lives.
Approximately 800,000 DACA recipients live in the U.S. Again, that's not all the undocumented young people. Those are just the ones who have registered with the government. And out of those, 29,000 healthcare workers are DACA recipients in the U.S. And I know you have worked with some DACA recipients in the healthcare industry. They're right there on the front lines with everybody else. What kind of specific concerns have you heard from them?
Oh, absolutely. They are saving our lives along with all first responders. They have this additional stress, which of course can potentially impact their immune system, making them more vulnerable to getting this virus among other illnesses. So it actually puts them at a higher risk, even though they are putting their lives on the line every day, working in hospitals, working in clinics. I have several who are considered first responders and are actually out there every day trying to protect us and our families from COVID-19.
So the U.S. could potentially face a shortage of doctors, medical students, residents, people who are pretty much at the front lines, as I mentioned. They are the ones who are the most in demand right now during this pandemic. What do you foresee could happen if the Supreme Court rules against DACA? Will these frontline workers and the other thousands of DACA recipients be deported? Is there actually some sort of a plan in place for them, as far as you know?
As far as we know, there's no plan. We do not expect that it would be a one day to the next sort of a decision. It most likely would be a when your work authorization expires sort of a decision. which would mean that it would be sort of a rotation or a rolling decision as far as that goes. But again, it's all speculation. Nothing has been stated as far as a plan. But yes, essentially, from one day to the next, they could no longer renew their work authorizations, would lose their licenses, and puts them into the same category of every other immigrant here without legal status. The difference, though, is that this is a brain trust that we have created, and we would potentially lose not only the first responders, but the businesses and the parents and the people who are doing research and the people who are serving our community in myriad ways, just because we refuse to prolong this program or create some other type of alternative program that would provide them with legal status.
The Congressional Hispanic Caucus put out a statement. They are calling on Homeland Security to automatically extend work permits, not just for DACA, but for TPS holders and any other immigrant or migrant who requires some sort of a special permit or visa. Do you foresee Congress taking action on that, seeing that we're in a very unprecedented pandemic right now? It's a global health emergency.
Well, it would make sense, which sort of lends me to believe that it might not happen. It's so tenuous because despite the fact that this seems like a no-brainer of a decision, there is that faction of the population that believes that these are quote-unquote jobs that would go to U.S. citizens, and therefore these DACA recipients have no right to this sort of status, as limited as it is. Renewing those types of documents automatically would be a step in the right direction. However, it still does not address the fact that this is not a permanent program. It was never designed to be. And Congress does need to step in and decide to do something about immigration in general, but in particular, this group that we have invested in such significant amounts to educate and to improve, and who are literally saving our communities.
Linda Brandmiller is an immigration attorney in San Antonio who works with DACA recipients and victims of crime, human trafficking, and domestic violence. When we come back, healthcare providers face the daily stress of caring for COVID-19 positive patients. Many doctors and nurses caring for your loved ones are not legal residents of the U.S.
I think people really have to remember that we are humans, too. We also have families.
A conversation with a DACA ICU nurse. Next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Over 202,000 DACA recipients are on the front lines during the COVID-19 pandemic. They're teachers, food industry workers, farm workers, grocery store clerks, janitors, doctors, and nurses. Juliana Cantu is one of them. She's a 31-year-old RN who works the intensive care units at Methodist Hospitals in San Antonio. Her family came from Monterrey, Mexico. She's been in the U.S. as long as she can remember, and like many dreamers, she didn't know she was undocumented until it was time to pursue a higher education.
Yes, that is correct. I also had no idea. You know, it wasn't a topic that was spoken. Like, I've been going since pre-K here to school. So, it wasn't till after high school, you know, where like you go to college and you find out that even if you get a career, you choose your profession, you get your career, I wasn't going to be able to work it because of my status that I was back then before DACA.
DACA came into being in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. When did you graduate from high school, and where did DACA sort of fall into your path? Did you get into college when DACA was already in place, or were you sort of in a holding pattern?
So I did not finish high school. I had dropped out in, I think, sophomore year because, you know, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do anything. So I figured then why go through it? Why, you know, all my dreams were crushed. That's how I felt like, you know. I was like, why even try? But everything started with me after DACA. After DACA was initiated and I knew that I could finally choose a profession, choose a career and go for it and actually work, you know, in whatever it is that I choose. I went and got my GED right away, started college, did my basics, prereqs, chose my career and all that. But yeah, it was after DACA.
And how did your career unfold after that? Now, obviously, you've got these DACA protections. What was it about nursing that made you want to get into that field?
Well, I mean, I just thought it was a good fit. You know, I did a lot of research online. I really had no one to guide me or help me because I'm the first one of my family to ever, you know, even get a GED. No one had ever finished high school. Everyone had dropped out. So hence I was the first to get a GED and to go to college. And so I just did a lot of research online and was kind of looking for the career because I really didn't know what I wanted to do, what I would be good at, you know? So with a lot of research, I thought that nursing would be a good fit for me. And thankfully, you know, now after years of being a nurse, it is. I'm wonderful. I'm so happy with my career choice. I'm really good at what I do. I'm very compassionate. My job, my career, profession is a passion. I love what I do.
So there's sort of this cloud. It's a very dark cloud hanging over DACA recipients right now. The Supreme Court may issue a ruling any day between now and June. It could even happen this week. We don't know whether to completely overturn DACA. Is this something that you think about every day? Because it seems to be, it would seem to me that it is such an anxiety causing pressure to have on your shoulders to know that what you're experiencing right now, this job of your dreams, could just end with one single ruling from the Supreme Court.
Yes, it is. It does hit hard. I do think about it every day, every hour, every minute of my life. If it were to end, that's it. All my dreams, all my family's dreams, you know, would end because I'm the main provider. Like everything would end, not just my profession, my career, and what I love to do, but economically, financially, it would put me back.
And now that we have this pandemic that is pretty much bringing medical providers to the front lines, you guys are exposed to this horrible virus for hours and hours. And it's not like the rest of us who we may run a risk going to the grocery stores. You are dealing face to face with COVID-19 patients. It's a highly, highly infectious virus. And so you've got this additional stressor in your life, not just might DACA end, but you also live with the question of, am I going to get sick?
So the stress with the pandemic, you know, that's just an extra stress because, you know, y'all are nurses, y'all are doctors. This is what y'all signed up for. But I mean, I think people really have to remember that we're humans too. We also have families. We have our children. And even though, yes, it's what we signed up for, you know, to care and protect and advocate for people who can't, it's a burden on us too, and a lot of people forget that. But since I'm an ICU nurse, I take care of not only COVID positive people, but the people that are the sickest of the sick. you know, that require being on life support because what COVID does to the lungs, it's horrible. They're unable to breathe on their own. So not only am I getting a COVID positive patient, but I'm getting the sickest of the sickest patients. It's just a lot of stress right now because not only do I have to think of my DACA ending and, you know, ruining my whole entire life, but also, you know, I could get sick myself or get someone in my family sick.
So do you sort of have a backup plan? What do you have planned in case the Supreme Court does say, that's it for DACA, it's no more, it's unconstitutional? Have you thought ahead as to what you're going to do with your life if that happens? I mean, nobody knows if you're going to be deported. So do you have sort of an alternative plan if the Supreme Court decision goes upside down for you?
I mean, I do have several plans, several ways that I could go about the situation. We can plan, but we don't know if they'll go through. That will kind of help me stay here legally and keep working. But like I said, there are plans, you know, that I make, but I can't never know if they're 100% certain.
So you've spoken in the past with Linda Brand-Miller. We spoke with her a little bit earlier. What kind of advice has she given you?
She tells me that if I can improve my legal status, you know, be a resident, to go ahead and go for it. It's like, you know, a hospital can sponsor me and I can become a resident, which is, you know, more legal status here. And, you know, we don't have to renew every 2 years, but being a resident holding a green card, your renewal is every 5 years. But I really don't want to ask a hospital to sponsor me, because if a hospital sponsors me, I am going to have to take a pay cut. I just kind of want to wait and see what happens with DACA.
Juliana Cantu is a DACA recipient and an RN who works the intensive care units at Methodist Hospitals in San Antonio. The Texas-Mexico border is a hub for manufacturing. Most factories are shut down, but those that are open now make medical supplies and devices badly needed during the COVID-19 pandemic. KTEP's Angela Cocherga reports.
When COVID-19 forced many businesses to close, some manufacturers on the border saw a critical need to get to work. Emma Schwartz is president of the Medical Center of the Americas Foundation. The nonprofit organization based in El Paso supports biomedical companies in this border region.
We had no idea that the efforts we'd be engaging in would be so critical to the crisis that we're experiencing right now.
Those efforts include fostering collaboration and innovation among the cluster of medical manufacturers and suppliers in the Ciudad Juarez, El Paso area. That mission is critical during the COVID-19 crisis.
We found innovators all over the region and really around the country and Mexico coming together, seeing how they could support each other to produce new innovations that could support the crisis.
The goal, ramp up production of personal protective equipment and ventilators desperately needed by hospitals on both sides of the border. Cecilia Levine is a founder of the nonprofit U.S.-Mexico-Canada Strategic Alliance.
We're also working with a group in Ciudad Juarez, in Monterrey and Sonora and Tijuana. We are all formed the group with the advice of some researchers from MIT and some researchers from India to try to create a ventilator. That can be also very affordable and easy to put together.
They're working to quickly get that ventilator tested and approved for hospitals in the next few weeks. But it's not just medical companies helping during the COVID-19 pandemic.
The good thing is that in Ciudad Juarez and many parts of Mexico now, we have a lot of incredible engineers and designers that are now with this coronavirus are being showcased as been coming up with excellent ideas.
Ciudad Juarez is home to more than 350 manufacturing plants. Most are shut down to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Those doing essential work are operating, and some are repurposing material and supplies, says Schwartz.
People are looking at converting automotive operations into medical device. For example, there are a lot of covers that are made for the seats inside of automobiles. They could be those operations could be converted to making isolation gowns.
Levine's company usually makes bedding and home furnishings at factories in El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. Now, the company's mass-producing washable face masks for essential workers, protective hospital bed mattress covers, and another product in demand in COVID-19 hotspots.
Unfortunately, we're also making body bags.
A grim reminder of the pandemic's rising death toll as border manufacturers race to make life-saving equipment and protective gear. In El Paso, I'm Angela Cocherga.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Ben Henry is our podcast producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.